I'm Kate Remington, and I'm talking with Eckhart Proy, the music director of the Stanford Symphony Orchestra, about the program they're presenting Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon at the Palace Theater in Stanford. And Eckhart, it's always so nice to have a chance to talk with you.
It's great to be there.
You've got a really wonderful program to finish out the orchestral part of the season with Kodály and Dvorak and Tchaikovsky. And I wanted to talk with you a little bit about the soloist in the Dvorak Violin Concerto, Tim Fain. He just seems like he is poised for big, big things. In fact, he's done some huge things already, but I think you guys are really lucky to have him.
I mean, he's an interesting guy. I mean, I've worked with him twice before in very different capacities. One was the Adams Violin Concerto, and the other one was a Mozart Violin Concerto. So very, very different things. And now the Dvorak. Now he reminds me a little bit of what Joseph Joachim would have done at the time for Dvorak. You know, he's very much involved not only in preserving the repertoire of the past, but really trying to also forge the future, you know, by commissioning new pieces, trying new venues, new ways of presenting music. And it's really very much out there trying to bring classical music forward, you know, and I don't even know what that means, you know, but he just sticking to the tried and true. In addition to that, he's a really, really great fiddle player as well.
Well, he's done some really interesting things. Like, he appeared as a violinist in the film The Black Swan. He also, his violin is what you hear in the film 12 Years a Slave. And so I wonder if those are all part of the package of doing something new and really bringing classical music to places where it's kind of unexpected.
I think so. You know, I mean, classical music is everywhere. You know, just sometimes we just don't notice it. And particularly when you have movie music, I mean, once you're in that system, of course, I mean, there's a lot of exposure, of course, in there too. And I think it speaks for his willingness to branch out. And I think that is what's so special about him, that he's always willing. Now, he's a new generation, basically, of soloist, a generation that tries to rethink, to not only repeat, but rethink and renew old things. And I think part of that is also, you know, appearing in movies and appearing on strange stages, or doing a lot with electronics or with new media. And he has his hands in all of this.
Well, I think it's going to be a really wonderful opportunity for listeners who haven't seen him before to really see what, you know, possibly the future of classical music is. And with that in mind, the Dvorak Violin Concerto, you mentioned Joseph Joachim, and he actually was kind of the technical consultant for Dvorak on this violin concerto.
Yeah, I mean, he was the inspiration behind it. I mean, he actually asked Dvorak to write a violin concerto and was, of course, instrumental and always sent him stuff back with corrections. And so even though, you know, Dvorak knew what he was doing, I mean, he was a fiddle player himself. He played viola for a living. But then Joachim always came back and said, I know you play the violin, but, you know, you might have not played for quite a while. And so that's why I'm telling you this. But, I mean, he was the inspiration for many concertos of all sorts of composers, and was instrumental in enriching our repertoire that way. And this concerto is kind of, it's not the black sheep, but it's not as often done as it should. His violin concerto is actually the second concerto that Dvorak wrote. He wrote first a piano concerto, which is barely, if at all, done. And then everybody does the cello concerto, which is his third concerto. And actually, the Stanford Symphony is going to open, we're going to open our next season with that cello concerto. I find that violin concerto very, 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 very intriguing. It is all, you know, exactly what you would Dvorak expect to do. It's very dramatic. It has a lot of Slavonic dance rhythms in it. It has beautiful melodies, and it's a showcase for the violin. And I'm always wondering, why is it that, you know, so few soloists play this piece? And that's, again, where Tim Fain comes in and is willing to branch out and revive, if you want, a concerto that is too bad not more often played. So it's actually a rare opportunity to hear this wonderful concerto.
And I was thinking as I was listening to the second movement, because to be honest, I haven't listened to it in a long time either, but the second movement is absolutely stunning. It's so wistful and so sad. And I was thinking how what a shame it was that Dvorak wasn't around to write film music, because clearly he could get you by the heartstrings and it would have been a powerful combination.
Well, and, you know, I mean, I think in particular the second movements, the composers can actually show how well they can write melodies in a simple way, but yet the simplicity is its strength. And I think Tchaikovsky does, for a while, a pretty good job in his Fifth Symphony. You know, he of course, it's much wilder than that. But if you also remember his Dvorak's New World Symphony, this famous English horn solo, so it is so simple, and it's because of its simplicity that it really just gets through to you, and it's very memorable that way too. But it's, you know, simplicity is something very difficult to do actually, but when it's well done, then it just stands out. Because, I mean, everything else in particular, also in contrast to the last movement of that concerto, which is so virtuoso and just flying. I mean, it's just brilliance left and right. So you need a contrast in the middle. You know, after the drama of the first and the brilliance in the last, you need this the second movement just to have this color in the center of the piece. That's really the heart of the entire piece, and you know, it works so well. It's so dramatically so well done.
It's a beautiful concerto, and as you say, I wish it was performed more often, but we'll be the lucky ones with this performance. And you touched on Tchaikovsky a little bit, and the Fifth Symphony is also on the program, and wow, this is such a showstopper, honestly. It's just, I think it's just about everybody's favorite Tchaikovsky symphony.
It is something, you know, whenever you listen to Tchaikovsky, it is like this maelstrom of you know, it just sucks you in. Also, it's actually very simple, the way he writes things. But it reminds me a little bit of Beethoven in its simplicity and its power, where he uses orchestra very much as a block, a lot of repetition, and the repetition is its strength. Again, you know, out of a weakness, making a strength. And of course, the lushness and the melodies. But I think and that's why people like it, is the way it ends. It's like with this Fourth Symphony, it ends in such a triumphant, again, almost like reminding of Beethoven way, that people can identify with it. You know, going through all kinds of struggles and dances, of course, but also struggles, particularly in the second movement. Then when finally he breaks loose, and you know, the sky is blue and the sun is shining and everything is happy. I mean, that's what people are waiting for, and I think that's why this symphony is probably, you know, as you said, you know, Tchaikovsky's most loved symphony.
And it's surprising because he apparently wasn't all that thrilled with it. He's kind of ambivalent about it. The reaction at the first performance wasn't all that great, and I wonder if maybe because he wasn't a very confident conductor, if the reaction would have been better with a different conductor for that first performance.
Yeah. I mean, when you think of Tchaikovsky, you know, when was there a time when he was actually a happy camper? And when was there a time when he actually did himself any favors, in particular by performing his own music, which was probably the worst thing he could do? And so he was just an odd guy. But it's always, you know, no matter what happened in his life, if it was, you know, his divorce during his Fourth Symphony or right before his death in the Sixth Symphony, there's always something about this music that people can connect to, and that is something actually very positive. I actually think that he was a positive guy. He just never really showed it. He was so depressed that this was kind of his reaching out to something positive, and that was the music. And I think that's, I mean, I hear a lot of a lot of strength and a lot of hope and a lot of funny things actually in these symphonies. You know, for me, it's not just, you know, banging aloud and tragedy. For me, it's actually very uplifting music.
And I think that's why it's just so very popular, because as you say, you know, we're all kind of flailing around, and it's just nice to hear an affirmation that something has a happy ending. And he does provide that. So
happy endings are always great. Happy endings are always great. And actually, you know, all three pieces on the program have a happy ending, which is, you know, it's not that often. You know, where Kodai and his Galanta dances, of course, you know, all different style of dances, ends up in this exuberant, super fast dance, and very similar in the Dvorak concerto, you know, this brilliant and thing at the end, and then of course as a Tchaikovsky. And particularly when you look at romantic music, this is not that easy to find. You know, I mean, people like to revel in their tragedy and their darkness. So, but this is quite different.
And the Kodai dances are really wonderful, because a lot of them are real authentic folk dances. And Kodai was part of this wave of composers, along with Bartok, that really were looking to their roots and what was right in front of their noses, music-wise.
Yeah. Yeah, and what I find interesting is that, you know, all three composers, Tchaikovsky, Dvorak, and Kodai, incorporated of you know, folk music of their countries of some sort, and to very, very different degrees. You know, where Tchaikovsky, you know, it's Russian, but you know, but you can pinpoint a couple of spots where it sounds really Russian, but it's not really folky. Where Dvorak is much more folky already, you know, where you can feel the Slavonic dance. But that is nothing compared to the authenticity and the closeness to actually the countryside and the peasants that Kodai provides in his Galanta dances.
And you could actually dance to them if you didn't want to sit in your seat, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's of course a showcase for our principal clarinet. I mean, this is a kind of a little clarinet concerto, and it's so wonderfully, colorfully orchestrated, and I think it used to be much more a staple of concert repertoire than it is now, and when you actually do it, when I look at the music, I just marvel at the way this is done so colorfully, and so engagingly. I mean, it's just wonderful music. I mean, even though people may not know the name Kodai, you know, he's kind of a little bit faded out of sight, you know, in the shadow of Bartok in particular. But he was just a phenomenal composer.
Uh-huh. Well, Eckhart, as always, it is just absolutely wonderful to talk with you and get your insights on the program. And sounds like we're really in for a treat this weekend.
Thank you very much.